church, have you had a good week? How's everything? Did you take Pastor Nigel's message from last week? And I was speaking it over his life this morning as I said to him, well, above all else, just stand, sweetheart. He's got a terrible virus. He ended up in bed on Thursday night and hasn't moved. And he's just, actually, he's been well behaved, you men. He's being very well behaved. No, this man flu stuff. No nonsense like that in our house. No, he'll be back on board in a couple of days, that I'm sure. But he does send his love, and he was actually going to be talking about today. We're starting to talk about our Leap into Spring giving program. And if you've not been a part of our church and aren't aware of it, it's probably the most exciting time in our church's year. We just love this subject. Pastor Nigel and I do, and you know, I have kept this from 1999. At this point in time in 1999, we had just started our church. We were just a small gathering of people, and this was our beginning of our promise time for missions. And we didn't call it Leap into Spring. We just called it our Missions Faith Promise for 1999. And back then we had, Nigel was working and also juggling, trying to establish the church. And we had a little baby, and we had a toddler and a little baby. And not looking at any, they're actually on either side of the room today. But Nigel and I, we didn't have a lot of money. I remember, this is actually a funny story. We were that poor that we got given the car from the missionary. Seriously. Now, if you've been in church a long time, missionaries had the label of being incredibly, you know, they were really poor people. Well, we were poorer than the missionary that had come back. We'd actually supported this missionary. Her name was Deanna Thomas in Afghanistan. Do you guys remember this? And Deanna Thomas was over there right at the time of the Taliban hitting, and it was all sorts of crazy things were going down at that time. But our church was involved in supporting aid projects over in Afghanistan. And so we were really, Nigel and I, we had no money. We had this old bomby car that used to, these days I don't think you'd even allow it on the road. All the black smoke would come out the back when you started it up. And we didn't, you couldn't open the boot. You used to have to get this pole and hold the boot up. And, you know, occasionally you'd knock it out the way and it'd land on your head. And so we were seriously poor by Australian standards. And so we believed in this. And so we actually used to give the massive amount of $10 a week. Never despise small beginnings, guys. Never despise small beginnings. And I just have kept this. I don't even know. I found it in a box of old photos that we've got upstairs in the office. And I actually found this. And I've actually got this on my note, my pin-up board. And I look at it all the time and think, wow. So there we go. There we go. It's the best time of the month. We've also got Pastor Kelvin Phillips coming, as you've already heard. And it is compulsory. Compulsory that you bring a dish from your culture. So we usually have fantastic kangaroo tail from our Aboriginal. We're not allowed turtle from the Torres Strait Islanders. They're not allowed to do that. Jeff's not to bring turtle. He's nosy. He can't bring turtle. He wants to bring a turtle, but he can't bring a turtle. But, you know, we've got kangaroo tail. We have our kangaroo tail stew. Who's ever had kangaroo tail stew? Right, you're in for a treat. It's awesome. We have African food, Indian food, Filipino food, Samoan food. Come on, what other food do we have? All sorts of food. Finnish food, we haven't had that yet. So bring it along and we all just go, oh, that's interesting. And we eat it and we love it and we have a great time. South American food, come on. Seriously, it's just awesome. Let's turn to the book of John, chapter 17, verses 13 to 19. Last week we finished a 17-week series on the book of Ephesians. And you're probably getting tired of hearing this, but I just want to repeat it again. The book of Ephesians is all about the plan. It is the plan that God had. God had a plan for this world. He had a plan for you and I, and he's always had a plan. The plan was Jesus Christ. It never has changed. It will never change. Jesus Christ is the plan for this world and for our life. And God has a plan also through Jesus Christ for your life. You have a great plan that God has for you. And so as we come into our missions time, this is very much about part of the plan that God has for all of our lives. And so it's really fitting that we finished Ephesians and we're coming into this time in our church, because this is about what you and I can do as a part of the plan that God has given every one of us. And I want to say straight from the outset that we can all be a part of this. You know, often we can think, well, I'm not such and such, or I'm not gifted to do, you know, such and such, or I'll never go overseas, Andrew. I can tell you now that we all can play a part of God's plan. You know, one of the things that we use, the language that we use in our church, is we call it the big win. It's actually a term, a secular term that was done from Jack Welch. Jack Welch is used to be the guru. He's quite elderly now. I'm not sure if he still is in business, but he used to be the guru of business around our world, and he's written some great books. And he would call it the big win. What's the big win? You know, for me as a pastor, the big win is that every person that comes into this building on a weekend actually senses the presence of God. They actually feel God. That when they walk through those doors, from the door greeter through to the cafe staff, through to the music team, through to the message, is that people sense God, whether that's through a warm handshake or someone saying hello or someone serving you a cup of coffee or looking after your children. To me, the big win is that Jesus Christ has been glorified through all of us. This is what missions is all about. It's the big win. It's about the church doing something. And we see that through Jesus Christ. You see, God will always show us the way. He'll never make us do anything he hasn't already done. And so what God did was God turned to the Son, Jesus Christ, and he says, they're not doing that well down there. They're not really doing it that well. He goes, I need someone to go. Jesus says, I'll go, send me. Mission comes from the Greek word missio, which means to be sent. That every one of us are sent. We're sent out as Christians. We just don't follow, we go. We're following what Christ did. Jesus came to earth so that we may know a better way of life. We as Christians have a responsibility to go out and show Christ to our world. We take the big win from here out. That doesn't mean you need to get on a plane. That just means that whatever you do in your life, you're being sent out. And today we're going to look at the title of my message, and it's the only slide we have today because this was actually done a little bit later than normal, my sermon prep, because Pastor Nigel was speaking this morning. But it's called Overflow. You know, we need to have overflow in our life. And so we're going to look at today the life of Jesus. And Jesus prays a prayer back to the Father before he goes to the cross. And from it, we can learn what is our missio, what is our mission, how are we being sent out. So come with me to read John 17, 13 to 19. And I'll be reading from the New King James Version. I haven't picked that one up for a while. It's awesome. I'm stuck in the message at the moment, but today we're going to be reading from this translation. So Jesus is praying back to the Father. He says, now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they may also be sanctified by the truth. So verse 18, to send, is from the Greek word missio, which we derive the word mission from, to be sent. And in these verses, Jesus right here tells us he was in mission. But also, anyone who comes into contact with him is in mission. What's a missionary? Well, they're sent to show something. You know, we actually have missionaries all around us. Just down the road, we actually have a missionary. It's called the Portuguese Embassy. You see, what is an ambassador? An ambassador is a missionary. They're shown, they are sent to show something. They are sent by their country to show us about their country. We have embassies all over the world. Jared and I, we are had the privilege the last few times we've been to Manila to stay with an Australian person who works for the Australian embassy, Georgia. Georgia's a fantastic young woman. And what she does is she represents Australia in the Philippines. She shows the Philippine community what is the She shows the community that she has come from and is living in what Australia is really like. She represents Australia and the government in a truthful and accurate way. And Jesus is the same. He was a missionary because he was sent to show God in a truthful and accurate way. That's what we are to do as ambassadors. That's what natural ambassadors do. And if you remember, Jesus was often correcting the religious view of the day. In Matthew 5:43, he said, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbour and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Jesus was entrusted with giving people a proper representation of who God was. He was heaven's ambassador. And Jesus was sent to save. So a missionary is sent to show, and a missionary is sent to save. Sent to show, what are we sent to show? God's love and God's truth. Now, a lot of people object to the idea that a missionary is sent to save. They don't mind if we practice Christianity privately or attend a church service or even do a few good things. But they do object to the idea that we want to convert others to our belief. They see this as such a narrow point of view. Imagine someone you love, though, having the symptoms of sickness that you once had, but they will not listen to reason because they don't think they're sick. What do? You make your case, you persuade, you use your own experience. You're in mission. You have to be in mission because you have this dynamic combination of both truth and love. You see, you know what the person needs to live their best life, and you have to share it. You see, you sang that you were lost, but now you're found. And love and truth causes you to get into mission. That's not narrow-mindedness. But Andrea, how can you dare say we share the gospel? Look at the atrocities of the past. We force cultures like Aboriginal culture and other cultures around the world through colonialism to accept Christianity. And that's why the world is such a mess today. Such a good point. But I believe this is where we got it really wrong. Because it wasn't a combination of love and truth when we came. What did we do? We forced Christ upon people. But the Apostle Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5:14, the love of Christ compels me. It's got to be done in love. We've sung songs today about love. About God's love should compel us. It must be done. Jesus never forced his views upon people of the day. He never forced them. He let them choose. And look, while we're on it, I do a lot of reading. I don't know if you've read the book by Richard Dawkins called The God Delusion. It's one of the most popular atheists that are out there today. They object to Christians talking to other people about their faith. And yet I find that Richard Dawkins is one of the most fervent evangelistic people I've ever met. Come on. Come on. As Christians, we can never say that our religion is a private thing. Because Jesus was a person in mission. He showed people the truth. And he prayed in verse 18, "Father, as you sent me into the world, I send them." So today, what are the features of mission of Jesus? Because it's our mission. We're going to look at the result of mission and we're also going to look at the power of mission. Well, the result of mission is joy. Jesus has been sent to earth and all of John 17 is about his mission. He says, these things are in his mission. In verse 4, he says, "I've completed the work you asked me to do." In verse 6, of John chapter 17, he says, Father, I've revealed your name. In verse 13, he says, I'm going to die on the cross for this mission. And we know that the Father told the Son, Jesus Christ, about this great mission. And he said, will you go and take this punishment? And Jesus said, the writer of Hebrews said in Hebrews 12, verse 3, for the sake of the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down on the right hand of the Father. In verse 13 of John chapter 17, Jesus says, I say these things that they may be filled with my joy. Lack of joy is the result of lack of mission. Human beings need mission. We were built for mission. There is a tight link between mission and sentness. Now, children understand this. When I was growing, my children were growing up, Nigel and I would often read them bedtime stories. I'm sure you've all done it. Nigel actually used to create a story. It was called Harry and Harry. Harry and Harry was a rabbit, and I'm not sure what the other animal was. Do you remember, Jared? A possum or something. And a wombat. And they used to get into all sorts, they used to go on all sorts of adventures. And that was the way that Nigel used to put the children to bed. He'd tell them this story. And, you know, think about it. If you were to talk to a 3 or a 4-year-old today, they would be having their Superman cape on, wouldn't they? Or the girl would be the princess and, you know, he'd have his Superman cape on. And all our stories, our children's stories are about adventure and about superheroes. And you talk to a 3 or a 4-year-old and if we had little Logan here today, Richard, we would actually be able to ask him, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? He'd be, I want to be a superhero. I want to save the world. You know, it's in us to want to do mission. It's in us to want to save the world. It's in us. It's in our DNA to have purpose because our DNA comes from God and our purpose is mission. But where did it go? What happened? What happened? I mean, did you and I wake up one day and say, gee, I'm so excited about getting to work in an office from 9 to 5 every day? When did it happen? We were going to save the world. You know, I go to university and I love being at university. I love it. At the moment, I'm doing this ridiculous unit on genocide and mass murder and war crimes. And I mean, that's at 8:30 on a Wednesday morning. I go, really? They should be in the afternoon. Who wants to do that? And we look at the atrocities of many cultures, including in Australia, the things that we didn't do right. And, you know, they now call it social justice. I just giggle. I'm sorry, Bremer. Bremer's going to one day run the United Nations. But I do giggle. Because when I was growing up, we called it mission. Now they call it social justice. It's just sexier. I mean, you know, no young person wants to do the same things that their parents did. So they just give it a new name. But you know what I mean? When did we stop wanting to save the world as the church? Well, actually, I can tell you when. It happened in the 1960s. There's lots of research on this. Now, I think I've talked about this before. Robert Putnam is a social, he studies social capital. And from that time on, we can see very clearly across all aspects of civic life, things started to decline. Because we bought into a world view that said all truth is relevant. What does that mean? Well, that means if it's good for you, do it. If it makes you feel good, do it. Because all truth is absolute. You can't tell me. No, no, that's not my truth. This is my truth. And so because we have sold into that world view, we started to believe that personal individual fulfillment was more important than church, family, country, shared beliefs or morals. We started to believe if other things got in the way of my personal fulfillment, my needs should always win out. There was no higher cause than my personal needs or individual happiness. Sound like today? Come on, we do ads that say it's all about you. Now that belief destroys mission because if there's no higher cause than you, then there is nothing to deny my happiness for. or really even to live for, or to have a mission for. But what you start to realize after a period of time is that what I was living for isn't making a difference. And here's the irony. By exaggerating my significance, I actually lose it. By raising my needs above others, I have no longer anything to sacrifice for. When we bought into my needs first, we gained our freedom, but we lost our joy. And mission is an essential ingredient for joy. It's a psychological need. It's a natural thing. Yet many of us have lost this joy because you've been living for yourself and have no higher commitment than yourself. And again, the irony is that when you seek to find yourself, you lose it, the Bible says. This is joy. It's not happiness. It's joy. It's a supernatural thing. It is a gift given to us by the Holy Spirit because it's not normal. It's not normal, if you like, to sacrifice for a higher purpose. It's in us, but we fight against it. We're constantly battling against it. You see, the pain of not buying that new car or upgrading to that better suburb, or maybe not going out and having takeaway this week, or the shame that comes when people ridicule us for the beliefs that we hold because we're living in mission. But it's what gives you joy. You know, when I think of our charity, Port Care, and the 25,000 people who access those services, now the community lunch, the JAM program for primary age kids that come in on a Monday, the breakfast program into the high school, the youth programs helping at-risk youth in the high schools, the Friday night fusion youth program. That's what gives me joy. I don't even run it, but it gives me joy. So secondly, the power for mission is an encounter with God. This little word, as, is very, very dynamic. In verse 18, Jesus says, as you sent me, as you sent me, I also send them. That means that we also are sent. See, what made Jesus a man in mission was the Father. What makes you and I a person in mission is the Son, Jesus Christ. In the Old Testament, Isaiah, this is actually quite a funny story. If you've ever read the book of Isaiah, it's quite a significant book. But I'm going to paraphrase it into Andrea language, because that's the blonde in me. So I see some quirky little things. So here we go. You know, Isaiah's just going to church this one Sunday. He's going up to the tabernacle, going up to pray. Now, he has an encounter with God. Now, it is quite funny because he sort of wasn't expecting it, the language sort of used in the book of Isaiah. He wasn't expecting it. But if you go to church, you sort of want to get an encounter for God. But he's sort of like, oh, my gosh, God's shown up. You can never know what's going to happen on a Sunday. So he goes into church and he has this encounter with God. Like, he'd gone to church many times, but there was the presence of God was there. And he gets this revelation of God's holiness. And immediately, whenever anyone ever comes into holiness, come into contact with God's holiness, immediately they see their own insecurities, their own deficiencies, the things that they've done wrong. And so he has this encounter with God and he says, God, you know, I'm a man of unclean lips. I need to stay back here. God says, no, I'm going to make you holy. And then he asks him a question. He says, I've got this need. I've got this group, this bunch of people. He said, I've got this group of people that aren't listening to me. And they're doing some pretty bad stuff. I need someone to go. Just sort of throws it out there, God does. Isaiah's had this encounter with God. He goes, I'll go. God's quite clear with him. He says, it's not a good gig, this one. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to be Brian Houston. You're not going to have 25,000 people jumping on a Sunday morning. You're not going to be Billy Graham. See, millions come to Christ. You're just going to go to this little insignificant tribe, tribe of Judah, my people, that way they'd broken off from the rest of Israel. And he goes, and I just want you to pastor them. But it's not going to end well for you. You're not going to have significant growth or significant change. Just letting you know. Hello? Anyone ever been felt like that in their ministry? And Isaiah goes, I'll go. I'll go. New Testament. Very misguided young man. In his own strength is trying to bring down the plans and purposes of God. This young guy's name's Saul. He has an encounter with God on a road. He's off to kill a whole bunch of Christians. He has an encounter with God. See, he thought he was doing the right thing, but he has this encounter with God. And God says, what are you doing, Saul? Why are you persecuting me? He has this encounter with God, changes his life. And he goes, I'll go. I'll go plant a whole bunch of churches around the world. I write most of the New Testament. But it doesn't end well for him. You cannot come into the presence of God and encounter God without there being change. But we need the power. We need the power. You see, joy is supernatural. It's a supernatural thing. This little word, as the Father sent me, that one tiny little word is what we are to do too. We're to go into the world the way Jesus did. So how do we do that? Well, I believe we do it the way that Jesus did. Luke 24:19. He was mighty in word and deed. He was mighty in word and deed. That means not only are we to preach the word of God and make disciples, but we're also to do things. Jesus did things. And why are we not more effective in mission, have you ever wondered? The requirement for effective mission is your and my personal holiness. Verses 17 to 19, Jesus says, sanctify them in the truth. And again in verse 19, he says, I send them out. And Jesus is saying that we have to be holy people when we go out. In other words, just like Isaiah and Paul, that encountered this holiness and it changed them and gave them incredible power, so too must you and I display to the world Jesus through our lives. At the end of the day, it's not going to be philosophy or theology that will show people Jesus. It's you and your life. It's what you do. It's how you behave. That's what people are wanting to see. If this Christianity you talk about actually makes a difference in your life, I need to see it, the world is saying. Eric Liddell, he was the Olympic runner that the movie The Chariots of Fire was made around. Some of you are far too young to even remember him or the movie. But there was a movie made called The Chariots of Fire. Now, many of you don't know that Eric Liddell was a young man of missionary parents. His parents were missionaries in China. And after his amazing career as an Olympic gold runner, he went back to China and spent the rest of his life as a missionary until he was interned into a concentration camp. And he wrote this. He said, we are all missionaries. Wherever we go, we either bring people nearer to Christ or we repel them from Christ. We have to love this world of God's, the different races, the different religions. We have to love them. And the more holy we become, the more we see what God sees. Father God doesn't want his kids to live in poverty or sickness or in sin. He wants all of his kids to have their very best life. Has anyone ever read the best-selling book by the author Katie Davies. It's called Kisses from Uganda, I think it's called. In the summer of 2007, I wanted to give you a modern-day missionary. You know, we can bring up all the oldies, but let's hear about a modern-day missionary. In 2006, 18-year-old Katie Davis from Brentwood, Tennessee, she travelled to Uganda for the first time. She was immediately captivated with the people and the culture. In the summer of 2007, she returned to Uganda to teach kindergarten at an orphanage. As she walked the children home, she was shocked to see the sheer number of school-aged children walking along the road, playing with their friends, washing the dishes or digging in the fields. And she learned that most schools in Uganda require school fees for attendance, making impoverished families unable to afford an education for their children. God laid it upon Katie's heart. This is straight off the press. I'm not adding a word to this. God laid it on Katie's heart to start an education sponsorship program where orphaned and vulnerable children were able to go to school through sponsorship. They were also given hot meals each day, spiritual discipleship and medical care. Originally intending to have only a handful of children, the program now sponsors over 700 children. Shortly thereafter, this is an 18-year-old, shortly thereafter, Katie was introduced to the Maasai people. Living in poverty and losing their children to malnutrition and starvation at an outstanding rate. She noticed their desperate need for nutritious food, so she now started a feeding outreach program, which provides 1,200 meals each day, Monday to Friday. As her friendship developed, she wanted to help the women in the village provide for their families, for the gospel to take root, and for them to be the change we wish to see within the community. She initiated a vocational program, this is an 18-year-old, to empower women to generate needed income. She learnt not microcredit without even having to learn it, by taking unique Ugandan magazine bead necklaces. Has anyone got one? I've actually got one, but I've got one from the newspaper necklace, which I've got from, I think, Ethiopia. The necklaces made by the women are then sold in the US, and the money the women receive for their beads allows them to support their family and send their children to school. Now the mother of 13 daughters. That's just physically not possible. She's adopted those kids. So now she's about 28. Katie says, people tell me I'm brave. People tell me I'm strong. People tell me I'm doing a good job. Well, here's the truth of it. These are her words. I'm not really that brave. I'm not really that strong. And I'm not doing anything spectacular. I am just doing what God called me to do as a follower of him. Feed his sheep. Do unto the least of his people. You know, C3 Fremantle, we too have a story like Katie's. In 2000, 7 years ago, I went to Liberia and I also saw that children needed to go to school, needed feeding, that we needed to start businesses, we needed to train pastors, we needed to provide medical supplies. And so for the last 7 years, we have established 2 schools, 4 churches, provided medical equipment and food to thousands of people in Liberia, as well as many years in Southeast Asia where we've established businesses, funded the repatriation of child soldiers, paid for countless medical operations for people. We've partnered with friends in India to provide saris and food for the widows, in East Africa and the establishment of churches and aid projects, the establishment of churches. We've sown into the Philippines, into the slum communities and the churches over there, and so on and so on. Why? Because we must take us to people. It's a question of holiness. You see, social justice won't cut it. You know, I love university, I love what I learn, but the reality is changing a society isn't enough. We can take people out of poverty. We can educate people. But at the end of the day, we can change social needs, but we need to change the heart. Because all that will happen is we'll see a transference of problems. People will come out of poverty. They will come out of education. All we'll mean is that we'll then transfer over to Western-type issues. We have to change a heart. But we also need to do the other things. When I was in Liberia for the first time, you know, I was just, again, I'm seriously blonde. Seriously. I've been reading the Truth and Reconciliation report that was written. It traces the history of Liberia from the 1800s right through, because the Liberian people want to know how they got to where they got, which was two civil wars and millions of people murdered or displaced. So I've been reading this report. It's really quite interesting. And, you know, when I was up there the first time, this report was just coming out in its draft format. And people were saying to me, Andrea, what would you do? Would you want justice, or would you seek forgiveness, give people forgiveness, clemency? I said, are you kidding me? I've got no idea. I'm just some dumb blonde girl from Australia. I've never had to go through what you've gone through. I've never had to see my family slaughtered. I've never had to run for my life. I've never had to endure 80% poverty and unemployment. You see, I know these are heart conditions because now, years later, when there's been millions of dollars poured into that country through economic aid from around the world, most of it is gone through corruption and inefficiencies and those things. So you see, it's not enough to change a society. We have to change the heart. So Jesus came to earth to change our heart. We take our heart to the nations. That's what we do. And so how do we do that? Well, Jesus did it in word and deed. So we do the practical, don't we? We educate, help in employment, help medically, and do all those things. That's what Leap into Spring is very much about. But Pastor Nigel has a view as well. And so he believes that any society that can have a strong, healthy church, out of that we want to flow out. He wants to get to the heart. I want to get to the education, employment, and health. So we do it together. We do the word and the deed. Isn't that awesome? That's what we do. Word and deed. So Leap into Spring is all about this. We have tasted and seen, C3 Fremantle, that the Lord is good. And we can't keep it private. We want to shout it out that he's been good and faithful and great. And just like that small beginning, you too can change a heart. You know, since that time, Nigel and I have given so, so much more. We give thousands every year. It is our main priority is to give to God's house and overseas. As our income increased, we chose to live at the same standard so that we could give more. Guys, does it really matter what we drive, where we live? We've got one shot at this life. One shot. If you want joy today, if life is tasteless and you're constantly striving for the next thing to make you happy, it's because there's no higher purpose except you. But you were made for world-changing mission. Joy comes as you live in mission. This is our annual program. It's a faith promise card. What it does is it asks you to commit in faith, in prayer, asking God, what can I give, Lord? And we take that and we use it. You know, we're only limited on what we do by the amount we get. We now, as you heard me say last week, I think Pastor Nigel and I now care for 9 or 10 churches around here in the world. They are so reliant on us. I can't even tell you. You know, we get calls weekly saying, we've got people starving. I'm talking food. I'm talking water. I'm talking basics. We get those calls every week. I get calls from churches in the Philippines that are going, we just need help. We need help to get out of poverty. We need help to pastor our churches. Come on, guys. This is what we were made to do.